Hello, listeners of the Byline Network podcast. We are coming to you recorded. Me from Bristol.
Chris, currently in Grantham.
And we are joined by three guests from Northwest Bylines. If you all just want to introduce yourselves.
Hello, I'm Isabel. I go by Izzy, though. And yes, I'm a student at Central Lancashire.
Hello, I'm Sophie. I'm also a student in Preston at the University of Central Lancashire.
Hi, I'm Kira. I work with European and National during March. Yeah, nice to be here.
Fantastic. And we are going to be talking about Brexit, or as I like to call it, the elephant of the commons. Can I just ask, first of all, how old were you guys when the Brexit referendum happened 7-8 years ago now?
I was 12, so I was really young.
Yeah, I was the same age. I was 12, 13 years old.
So,
yeah, 14. Yeah, 2016.
Wow. So unless there was like shenanigans going on, you guys just did not vote in that referendum.
No.
How aware were you guys of it? Because like I was very aware of it because I was of voting age. I guess around 12, you know, preteen times, even into teenage times, a lot of people I knew just weren't interested in politics. So how aware were you of what was going on?
I was actually quite aware of it, probably not as much as, you know, adults who could vote were, but my family had quite a lot to say politically, so I knew quite a bit about it. And then we were taught a little bit about what was going on in school and that type of thing. But yeah, so I knew what was happening, I knew what was going on, and I knew the arguments presented by both sides.
Yeah, I think as well, I live in Liverpool, and I've grown up in Liverpool. I think it was... I'm lucky that I was living in a relatively sort of left-wing area, and I think something like that being brought up with a sort of a Conservative government, I suppose, I think anything that was something like that would change the reality for the country. I think I was lucky that sort of we as a school really we did take notice of it, but yeah, I think I just remember being really sad, to be honest.
I wasn't as aware of it because, well, I was 12, but our school didn't really go into it. And my parents of the older generation, they did discuss it, but I don't think I grasped what was going on. But as I've grown up and researched it and looked into it, I've kind of understood it a bit more. Like Izzy said, I knew what was happening, but I didn't understand the implications of what could have happened.
Picking up on the family element of it, and that was an interesting point. So, I mean, I was 17 when the referendum happened. Just, I was a month off being able to vote in it, which was frustrating. But I mean,
hang on. Am I the only person that voted in that referendum?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh no.
But it was interesting because what you're talking about, the being aware of it, like I was in sort of sixth form, so a lot of my friends were of age when they could vote, and they were able to, and they were engaged in it for that reason. But the interest, I think it was interesting what you're talking about in terms of what you all said about your parents talking about it. Do you think that shaped your opinion at the time at all, or were you sort of left to sort of make up your own mind at the time? I know you were quite young when it happened, but do you think that your parents' opinion on it and the discussions you had influenced how you feel now?
They definitely did. It was, when I say my parents, I mean specifically my mum. My dad's not very big into politics, but my mum is very into politics. And she very strongly believed that we should remain in the European Union. And that's still an opinion that I hold as well now. I think we should have also stayed in the European Union. And I held that opinion when it was, and I've got absolutely no doubt that that was definitely influenced by what my mum was telling me and what we were discussing. But obviously, as I've grown up, I've tried to look into politics myself personally and not just rely on my parents. And I still think that stance is, I claim it's completely independent of whatever I've been taught throughout my life from childhood. But the odds are that it's probably not, even if I just like to think it is.
Yeah, I grew up in quite a political household, or my mum was anyway. And it's quite hard to shake off those those sort of conversations and the influence that you have.
I tend to find that a lot of politics parents have is reflected on their kids. Because I grew up in quite a conservative area, and there were a lot of people who would have agreed with me on a lot of things, but as soon as it came to voting in general elections and all that kind of stuff, I was genuinely shocked about like which way they said they would go. Even if they were like conservative people, there were still some people on who generally agreed with me who said they wanted to leave, and I quote, for leftist reasons, which still sounds like an oxymoron to me to this day.
I had people at my school who voted to leave just because they wanted to see what would happen, not for any specific reason. They just sort of did it because they thought it was funny.
I think as well, when you're sort of younger, I think that, like, I suppose it's like propaganda in a way. I think that can, like, you're much more vulnerable to that. And I think if everybody around you is going one direction, it's quite difficult to try and veer off the other direction and make your own opinions. So yeah, I think if you're surrounded by people who are going one way, it's, you know, that's sort of a bit inevitable, really, that you're going to have those opinions.
How has life really changed for you guys? Because me and Chris, we're like adults now with proper adult lives. I would be very interested to see from like school going into adult life, how has that life really changed for you? Have you seen like a loss in quality, prospects, all that kind of stuff?
I think it's been a bit tricky to distinguish. I definitely, when you look into it, I definitely think that Brexit has a very bad impact on how I sort of live now. But I think because it was Brexit and then it was COVID and there's, you know, the war in Ukraine, the Gaza conflict, there are a lot of issues that people can then say the reason for these high prices or this inflation or this lack of trade or whatever it is due to these other issues. And obviously, if you look at it, you look at research and studies, it still says that Brexit plays a large part in what's happening with inflation and that type of thing. But I think on like a surface level, it's difficult to just go into a shop, for example, and see food prices and think this is because of Brexit, because we turned adults in 2022, 2021. So we were just still coming out of COVID. So there wasn't really things were bad already. There wasn't like a stark contrast as it had been Brexit building up and then into COVID and then obviously into all the other issues that have happened since then. So I can't like actively say in my day-to-day life that Brexit has had, I noticed the impact of Brexit, but I know that if you go under the surface and you look at the other issues, it definitely has. It's just not something that's obvious and in your face.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people sort of have said those other issues that you mentioned, COVID and trade issues and stuff, that's higher priority in a way. Like, they're the things that impact life more. But actually, as you say, if you look underneath that, most of those issues have at least some links to Brexit and the influence of that. So I think sometimes it is to say like that's a lesser priority, when in fact it's all the same, it's all knitted together under the surface.
Yeah, I agree with what the others were saying. And as well, I remember, it might be a little bit off topic, but I remember being a kid and going on holiday to Tenerife, and we went regularly every year, and there was waitresses who worked there from the UK. I remember after Brexit going, and they were having the discussion of, well, we can't work here anymore because we have to have a visa, we have to have everything in place. But I remember being a little kid and thinking, oh, I'd love to go for the summer holiday. I was practicing Spanish at the time. I'd love to go when I'm older in the summer holidays, work in Tenerife, maybe for the summer as a waitress and improve on my Spanish. But with Brexit and all the implications of that, I find that would be a very, very difficult thing to do now.
Yeah, that was kind of something I was looking to touch on, because I mean, obviously, and you guys are studying at the moment at university, and when I was at university, which feels like a long time ago now, there were people who I'd met at my university who were here on the Erasmus scheme. So they were transferred from other universities in Europe, and I've made some great friends through that. Are there any students at your university who you've met who would have maybe come on that scheme, or is there not really anybody at your university who's from abroad? Or
there are a couple of people who are international students, but they haven't come from Europe. They've come from places like Asia. We haven't got any sort of exchange programs from like France or Spain or anything like that, at least on our course. There could be others in different courses, but on ours there aren't any that are there. No.
Yeah. And I mean, it's interesting what you said, Sophie, as well, about the traveling to Tenerife to do the waitressing for a summer. Because obviously, like, I think for a few years ago, certainly maybe over more than a decade ago, that was quite common for people our age to do, you know, to go away for a couple of months, maybe a year, and do some maybe work in hospitality somewhere hot with a different language like Spain. And yeah, now that's all blocked off to us.
And like you're saying, the Erasmus Plus scheme, like the replacement, the Turing scheme, that by all accounts, that's basically not a replacement. It just doesn't, it's not given the same opportunities for students. And yet I recently read that, I was so shocked by this, the number of EU students enrolling in UK universities has actually like halved, like a full half has gone. And I've really been really genuinely shocked by that. I think of all like the repercussions of that economically and culturally. It's just, it's ridiculous.
So, I mean, very, very recently, the UK has rejoined the Horizon scheme, much to, I assume, the disappointment of Suella Braverman. And do you foresee a future where we'll rejoin Erasmus? Like, not necessarily rejoining the EU, but just, like, rejoining, like, Erasmus, at least.
I do know that Young European Movement are currently working on quite a big campaign, Embrace Erasmus, which is basically, they're basically trying to get the government to take notice, basically, and say, here's a roadmap to get back into Erasmus. It's incredibly needed. Yeah, I think that's going ahead, and it has got a lot of traction, I think. So yeah, I would say yes. I think it's needed. I think if people keep campaigning for it, surely I would like to think that it is possible, and yeah, it's definitely needed.
I was just going to add as well, I think it's definitely something that's needed, as we said, that Erasmus seems like a better scheme overall for people wanting to study abroad than Turing. Whether it'll come back or not, though, I'm not sure, because at least as I understand it, the tuition costs and loans that go into the Erasmus or went into the Erasmus schemes were covered by our government, whereas now I believe the Turing scheme expects the host country to pay for that. And this could be wrong, it's been a while since I've looked into it, but this is as I understand it. And I think at least while ever they can pass the Turing scheme off as a good thing and say, yeah, this is good, and they don't have to pay out those loans for us to then go and study, whether it's working or not is a different matter. But it makes me think that it's unlikely to come back anytime soon.
And I think as well, there's definitely a sort of a preoccupation with like patching up, like patchwork, that's, we've got all these issues, let's fix that one, let's have a fiddle with that, when personally I just think we've identified these issues, it's affecting lots and lots of people's lives, we know the solution, let's rejoin everything. But I mean, that's my opinion.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, Kira, because my next question was, do you guys think we should rejoin the EU? / do you guys think we'll ever rejoin the EU?
I'll keep quiet.
I think it's hard to say whether we will rejoin. But I know a lot of people have been disappointed with how the government have promised lots of things and they haven't came through to it. In my opinion, I think we should rejoin. I think lots of things will work themselves out if we did that. But like I said, lots of people are very disappointed and I don't know how the government is going to work it out.
Yeah, I think the same. I think I feel as though the rejoining the European Union is something that, you know, for example, when we first joined the European Union, I was going, how many years ago was that now? I don't even, anyway, it was quite a while ago. So I can see us rejoining it, but like in 30 years or something like that. Because I just think it'll sort of play out in a cycle of we need something, you know, as a political talking point. And how, you know, we go through cycles, whether we have a Labour government or a Conservative government and such. And I feel like it'll just kind of go through the cycle. And maybe not, I expect Labour will win this general election personally, but as you go on, maybe in the next cycle of Conservatives and then Labour, there might be another campaign where they say we will hold a referendum to rejoin the EU. And in that case, people, well, it'll be like we said earlier about, oh, they just fancy a change to see what it's like after 30, 40 years of being outside the EU, they might be like, yeah, fancy a change, let's go back into the EU. But I personally think we should rejoin it much sooner than that. Everything's very, very unstable right now. And having the European Union there being part of that would be a much stronger, I think. With everything that's sort of a lot of unknowns and factors just in the general world right now, I feel like it's a beneficial thing to be a part of.
Well, speaking personally, and I can't believe I'm the most optimistic person in this room about this, I don't think it's going to take 30 years. I distinctly remember in 2016 telling one of my colleagues, because I worked at a pub for a certain well-known pub corporation that I don't think I'm allowed to name. I remember telling my friend, who I know for a fact voted Leave, Brexit is such a bad idea, so economically unviable, that when it collapses, not if, when, we're just going to rejoin the EU in like 10 years time. And I've still got 2 years on that prediction. You know, I think I still stand by that. Brexit has been like such a terrible idea, not just for it, and it's not like a bad idea that can only affect one industry. This isn't a bad idea that's affected every industry, even the ones that are supposedly like strong, like the one I'm in, like the film industry, which you would think would be able to survive. It's still affecting that, and films and TV are like our biggest export to the world. Not that I'm biased or anything, but like, I think it will get to a point in a couple of years' time, but maybe this side of 2030, maybe a couple of years out the other side of 2030. But I think it's going to get to a point where it's just like, right, either we rejoin the EU or the economy collapses.
Yeah.
That's where I think it is going to head. And I honestly think that it's not even going to get to that point where it's just like, yeah, let's just rejoin it.
I think it might be deeper than that. I think that a big part of that movement, if that comes to pass, is the thoughts and decisions of young people like yourselves who get to a point in their lives where they go, oh, I would love to maybe move abroad, or I want to, or you meet someone who's studying here from abroad and then they get kicked back out because they can't earn £38,000 a year. And, you know, all these opportunities that are being denied that you don't realize right now because you've not finished university, you've not finished your studies, you've not gone on to full-time work yet. Once people of your sort of generation and mine, when you realize those opportunities aren't that your parents had, you're not afforded to, I think that will generate real anger, especially with the policy changes that are coming in over the coming few months, or have been trailed as coming in over the coming months, especially to do with immigration policy. Mm-hmm. I think that it'll be a combination of, like you said, maybe the economy will just stop working for people and that'll be angry. But I think that the opportunities being denied to people will also play a part in that rejoin movement if that comes to pass.
Yeah. And in the latest polling, like 80+ percent of 18 to 24 year olds said they would vote to rejoin. So I think you're right. Young people really do are going to drive this. I personally think it's inevitable. It's needed and it's wanted. So why wouldn't we rejoin? I think it's just a matter of getting the campaign more known about, more traction. I agree.
Okay, so I guess what the next question following on from that, guys, is that do you think that Brexit was like a generational thing, or do you think that it was mostly done as like a protest vote, you know, looking back in hindsight? Because, you know, speaking personally, I think the fact that David Cameron was very vocally on one side of the argument made a lot of people just go, oh, well, we don't really like him.
Okay. I do definitely think it has elements of a generational thing. People often say, you know, the argument that a lot of young people voted to remain and they're the ones who are going to be affected by it, whereas a lot of the older generations voted to leave and they are not really going to suffer the consequences of it because they're either they're older and they might die off in a few years. I know that sounds very cruel, but it is the argument a lot of people have made, that it's not going to affect them. And I think there is that argument that it's generational because of that reason. But then I suppose it does come back to the kind of populist thing of people didn't like David Cameron and he was on one side of it. And then equally, it came down to us. I know I'm aware that David Cameron was obviously on the Remain campaign, but a lot of Conservative MPs were obviously on the Leave campaign. And I think even whether you stand on either side, people who voted Conservative were more likely to vote to leave, I think, and people who voted Remain are more likely to be Labour supporters, just generally. Whether you actually pay attention to the referendum or not, it's just based on, oh, I like this party, and a lot of them believe this.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think as well, a huge part of the Leave campaign was the lies about the money going to the NHS. I think a lot of people were starting to see the NHS and the care services basically disintegrating in front of them. And I think there was a big drive for all this money we'll save from sending it to the EU, we'll go straight to the NHS. And obviously that has not happened. And was never going to happen. But I think, yeah, I think things that people really did care about cross-generationally, I think they're sort of used against us, I suppose. I think everybody's being lied to. I do definitely agree there's a definitely generational element to it, but I think everyone has the right to be angry about it, no matter what your age.
So there was one sort of overarching question that I think is quite important to ask you guys. And from the sounds of things, the next general election will be the first one you can all vote in. Is that right? Yep. So
yeah.
Welcome to the world of politics. It sucks.
So, I mean, obviously, this is the first election that you'll all be able to vote in. I thought this would be an interesting question to ask and hear what you have to say. So, I mean, regardless of what party you'd end up voting for, whatever party wins the election, what is one thing you would like to see from them?
Do we have to only say one?
You can say more than one if you want to, but what, maybe better to rephrase it, what would you want to see them prioritise is probably the better question.
I think for me personally, proportional representation is a big one. But also, yeah, rejoin. I think some, you know, a party needs to advocate for a large majority of the population's wishes. Now it's been long enough. people need to stop cowering away from it and stand up, I think.
I was going to say, I mean, I would really love it if we rejoined the EU, but I think, as you just mentioned, Kira, they're cowering away from it. And I think at least for the next election, all politicians, I feel, are going to continue to cower away from any strong Brexit stance. So as much as I'd love to see us rejoin the EU, I think regardless of what party you kind of vote for, at least the bigger parties, I feel like they're just going to kind of gloss over it because it'll start controversy and I don't think it'll help them out in terms of votes. So, well, that's not a good answer because obviously I think it's important that we discuss that. But in terms of getting them, you know, into 10 Downing Street, I don't think they're going to bring it up and say. So it wouldn't personally be one of my priorities just because I don't think it's going to happen this election. But for me personally, with the what would I like to see them prioritise, I think just generally stabilising things. That's a very broad answer, but whether it's the NHS, education system, general, you know, I'd like, to be honest, it's more that I would like to see them reverse some of the policies that have been put in place than put in place new policies, whether that's, like you said, the £37,000 that you need to make to move here, or whether it's the Rwanda scheme, whatever, you know, just reverse them, please.
I think, like Izzy said, there's loads of important things that the government need to look at the moment, from the homelessness crisis, the cost of living, the NHS, the underfunding of so many different sectors. I think it's hard to prioritise one thing. And for me personally, like Izzy said, Brexit isn't at the top of my list because I come from a household with lots of nurses and I hear about the horrors of the underfunding and how they have to cope from. So personally, I'd like to see that prioritised. But also, I don't want any more empty promises. I want them to deliver on and do what they say they're going to do, because I feel like that's a big issue as well.
I think I just worry that by having very specific, we're not fixing the system, I suppose, by having the sort of very marginalised, this needs fixing, that needs fixing. For me, I think obviously Brexit is a relatively specific issue, but I sort of do think it goes beyond just Brexit and rejoin. It goes beyond that. I think things like proportional representation will stop something like this ever happening again. I think focusing on what the EU is and what it does for the country, or did for the country, I think more systemic change needs to happen. And I think putting pressure on bigger parties, because unfortunately the system we're in, there are two main parties. It's one or the other that gets in at the moment, unfortunately. I think putting pressure on them to change systematically so that we are in a different position, you know, 10, 20 years down the line, where things are fairer.
Izzy, Kira, Sophie, thank you very much for joining us all the way from the Northwest.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
I've been Julian from Bristol.
And this has been Chris, currently in Grantham.
This has been the Bylines Network podcast with me, Julian, and Christopher Davis. We were joined this week by Isabel Goodhand, Kira Sargent, and Sophie Swain. Thank you very much for joining us over this festive period, and we do hope that you have a very good Christmas. Thank you.